Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. So this time, it seems like we have a listener gearing up for a busy growing season, right?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. They've just finished pruning their grapevines, and they're already looking ahead to that first pick. I know I would be.
Absolutely. Always an exciting time.
It is. So we're going to walk with them through the journey, cover everything from fertilizing and pest control to those training systems and harvest prep. Yeah, everything.
Perfect.
Yeah, all the good stuff. We've got some great research, actually, on grape growing and winemaking here to guide us, so let's dive right in.
It's an exciting time in the vineyard, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the vines may look dormant after pruning, there's a lot going on beneath the surface.
Oh, I can imagine. So much happens out of sight in nature, right?
Absolutely.
What is going on inside those newly pruned vines?
Well, one of the first things to understand is how the vine wakes up in spring.
Okay.
You know, think of it like a slow and steady process of the phloem cells regaining their ability to move nutrients up and down the cane. And this process, it begins at the buds and spreads from there.
So even though our listener just pruned, their vines are already starting this revival.
That's right. And unlike the phloem, the xylem vessels, which are responsible for transporting water, they are ready to go whenever temperatures allow. They don't need that gradual reawakening.
Oh, wow. It really makes you wonder what else we miss just because it's happening underground or inside the plant.
I know.
Why is it so important for the listener to understand these internal processes?
Well, because knowing how the vine functions at this level, it helps you make those informed decisions throughout the growing season.
Yeah.
For example, you know, understanding the role of the phloem will be really crucial when we talk about fertilization strategies a little bit later.
Okay. I'm starting to see the connection here. Now, our source material mentioned the importance of sunlight for vine growth, of course.
Right.
What effect does sunlight have on the vines, especially now in early spring?
Sunlight is absolutely critical, not just for photosynthesis either. Yeah, it actually influences the structure and function of the leaves themselves.
Wow.
In fact, leaves that are shaded, they often don't photosynthesize enough to even contribute much to the vine's growth at all.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's not just about getting enough sunlight overall. It's about making sure each leaf gets adequate exposure.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
That's why pruning and training systems that optimize light exposure for every leaf are so important.
I see. Now, I remember reading something about rootstocks in the material we shared.
Okay.
I know that they're important for grafting, but do they still matter at this stage after the vines are established?
Absolutely. Rootstock selection continues to be a crucial factor in the vineyard's success.
Oh, wow.
Different rootstocks can significantly impact things like early ripening and the vine's resistance to cold temperatures.
So choosing the wrong rootstock could really set the vines back.
It certainly could. And remember, your geographical location plays a big role here. You need rootstocks that are adapted to your specific climate. For instance, if you have a shorter growing season, riparia rootstocks might be a good option.
Okay, so matching the rootstock to the environment is key. What about those devigorating rootstocks I read about?
Yeah.
They sound kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Why would I want to limit my vine's growth?
That's a great question. These rootstocks are actually designed to improve fruit quality.
Oh.
Often at the expense of yield. You know, it's a trade-off.
Smaller harvest, but potentially better grapes.
Exactly. And here's another interesting thing about rootstocks. They can also influence how the vine absorbs nutrients.
Which brings us perfectly to fertilization. I know that's a big one for me, especially now as the growing season kicks off.
It is. It is a critical aspect of vine care.
Uh-huh.
And you have a couple of main approaches to consider. Organic fertilization using composts and manures.
Right.
And inorganic fertilization using chemical fertilizers.
I've always been drawn to organic methods. You know, it feels more natural.
Yeah. Both methods have their own advantages and disadvantages. Organic fertilizers can be a bit unpredictable in terms of nutrient release, while inorganic fertilizers allow for more precise timing and potentially more efficient uptake by the vines.
So inorganic fertilizers offer more control.
Yeah.
But is that always a good thing?
It's not always that simple. For instance, inorganic fertilizers can be more susceptible to leaching, especially during those cool, wet periods we see often in early spring.
Right. I've heard that leaching can be a problem, especially with sandy soils.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to lose those valuable nutrients before they can benefit the plants.
Exactly. So there are trade-offs to consider with both approaches. The best choice for you is going to depend on a variety of factors, including your soil type, climate, and the specific needs of your grapevines.
So it sounds like there's no one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to fertilization.
Right.
I'm already starting to see how much thought needs to go into each decision in the vineyard.
It's a bit like putting together a puzzle. You need to understand all the pieces and how they fit together to create a successful outcome.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground already. We've talked about the vine's inner workings, the importance of sunlight, selecting the right rootstock, and now fertilization. What's next on our viticulture checklist?
Protecting your investment, of course.
Wow.
Let's talk about managing pests and diseases.
Yes, the ever-present threat to any gardener's peace of mind. Nobody wants to lose their crop to a bunch of hungry bugs or a nasty fungus.
Exactly. It's a constant battle in the vineyard, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And in viticulture, there are some key adversaries you need to be aware of.
Okay.
Botrytis cinerea, also known as bunch rot, is a major one.
Right.
Then you've got powdery mildew and a whole slew of other grape vine diseases that can really wreak havoc.
These names sound pretty scary. Can you paint me a picture of what kind of damage they can cause?
Well, botrytis, for example, can cause your grapes to rot right on the
Oh,
vine. A real
no.
heartbreak for any grower.
Yeah.
Powdery mildew coats the leaves and fruit with a white powder, which interferes with photosynthesis and fruit development. And then there are diseases like Pitre disease,
Okay.
which can cause serious problems, especially in younger vines.
Okay. I'm officially terrified. What can I do to protect my vines from these villains?
Well, the key is to take a multi-pronged approach.
Okay.
Fungicidal sprays are an important tool in your arsenal, but environmental modifications are equally crucial.
Okay.
So think about pruning to improve airflow, and reduce that humidity, which can make it harder for the fungi to thrive.
So it's not just about spraying chemicals, it's about creating an environment that is less hospitable to pests and diseases.
Exactly. And here's a fascinating development in the world of disease control. There's a new class of agents called benzothiazoles that actually boost the plant's natural defenses.
Wow, that sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, Plants with Superpowers.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. These agents activate what's called systemic acquired resistance, making the plant more resistant to a wide range of pathogens. It's like giving your vines their own suit of armor.
That's incredible. It seems like there are always new discoveries being made in the world of plant science.
Absolutely. That's why it's so important to stay informed and be open to trying new approaches.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I've definitely got a lot to think about when it comes to pest and disease management. But ultimately, all this hard work is leading up to that magical moment.
Harvest time.
Yes.
That's right. And as harvest approaches, it's time to start thinking about how to best prepare your vines for that final stage. Training systems play a big role here.
Okay, we talked briefly about training systems earlier. Can you remind me what the key considerations are when choosing a system?
Sure. You have options like high training, which is often used in cooler regions, and low training, which can be more suitable for warmer climates. Each system has its own advantages and disadvantages.
I seem to recall that high training can offer some protection from frost,
Yeah.
and low training might result in better fruit quality. Am I right?
You've got a good memory.
Okay, good.
And of course, careful monitoring of your vines is absolutely crucial as harvest approaches.
Right.
You want to keep a close eye on the grapes to ensure they reach that optimal ripeness for that perfect first pick.
It's all about timing, isn't it?
It
I'm
is.
already feeling that anticipation building.
It's one of the most rewarding moments in the vineyard, seeing all that hard work culminate in a beautiful harvest.
This has been an incredible deep dive so far. From the inner workings of the vine to battling those pests and diseases and now preparing for harvest, it's like a carefully choreographed dance between nature and human intervention.
It truly is. And while we've covered a lot of information, there's always more to learn and explore in this fascinating world of viticulture. What stands out to you most from our conversation so far?
I think what struck me the most is how interconnected everything is in the vineyard.
Yeah.
The choices you make early on, like rootstock selection and training system, they have a ripple effect throughout the entire growing season.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's all about understanding that interplay between different factors and making those informed decisions that support the health and productivity of your vines.
It makes me realize that being a successful grape grower requires not only those practical skills, but also a deep understanding of the science behind viticulture.
Exactly. And don't forget the passion and dedication it takes to nurture these amazing plants.
Speaking of passion, I'm curious to hear what details from the source material really sparked your interest. Was there anything that surprised you or challenged your assumptions about grape growing?
You know, the research on the impact of shade on leaf function really made me think.
Yeah.
It's not just about the amount of sunlight, but the quality and duration of light exposure as well.
Right.
The fact that heavily shaded leaves can essentially become freeloaders, not contributing much to the vine's growth, was a real eye-opener.
That's a great point. It highlights the importance of those training systems that we discussed.
Exactly. It's not just about aesthetics, it's about creating an environment where each leaf has the opportunity to reach its full photosynthetic potential.
It's all about maximizing efficiency.
Precisely. Another detail I found fascinating was the research on benzothioazoles, those disease control agents that activate the plant's natural defenses.
Right.
It's a remarkable example of how we can harness the power of nature to protect our crops.
Plants fighting back against their enemies. I love that image.
It's pretty incredible, and it speaks to the remarkable complexity and resilience of the plant world.
It makes you realize how much we still have to learn from nature.
Absolutely. And these deep dives are all about sparking that curiosity and encouraging us to keep exploring the amazing world around us.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. From the tiniest, yes. Let's talk about those juicy details. Okay, let's dive into the world of the grape itself. When I think about a grape, I usually picture the basics, skin, flesh, and seeds. But I'm guessing there's more to it than meets the eye.
You bet. There's a whole universe of complexity within each tiny berry. For instance, right beneath the skin, there's a layer called the hypodermis.
Hypodermis, it sounds almost like a sci-fi term. What's so special about this layer?
Well, when the grapes are young, the hypodermal cells are packed with chloroplasts, which, as you know, are responsible for photosynthesis. But here's where it gets interesting. As the grapes ripen and approach veraison, that's when they start to change color. The chloroplasts begin to transform.
So as the grapes shift from green to red or purple, something's happening inside those hypodermal cells.
Exactly. They lose their chloroplasts and start to accumulate oil droplets. These modified structures become the sites where important aroma compounds are produced, things like terpenes and norisoprenoids.
Wow, so the hypodermis is like a miniature fragrance factory within each grape.
It really is.
That's incredible.
And speaking of aroma compounds, we can't forget about tannins, those molecules that give red wines their structure and astringency.
Tannins. I know they're important, but I'll admit I've always found them a bit mysterious. What exactly are they, and how do they develop in the grape?
Tannins are complex molecules, but they play a key role in the character of wine. As grapes mature, the tannins in the skin undergo changes, becoming more polymerized and integrating with anthocyanins. Those are the pigments that give the grapes their color.
So tannins aren't just about that mouth-puckering sensation. They actually contribute to the color of red wine as well.
Precisely. It's this fascinating interplay of chemistry and biology that gives wine its complexity. And as the grapes ripen, the sugar content also increases, driven by photosynthesis and influenced by factors like temperature and water availability.
Right, sugar is essential for fermentation, the process that transforms those grapes into delicious wine.
Exactly. And speaking of fermentation, the yeast responsible for this magical transformation also play a critical role in shaping the final flavor profile of the wine.
Now, when it comes to yeast, I tend to think of them as being pretty much all the same. But I'm guessing there's more to this story.
There's a surprising amount of diversity in the world of yeast.
Oh.
Different strains of yeast have unique characteristics that can impact the flavor and aroma of the wine. Some strains are known for efficiently converting sugar to alcohol, while others contribute specific aromatic compounds.
So choosing the right yeast strain is almost as important as choosing the right grape variety.
It's a key decision for winemakers, for sure, and it highlights the incredibly intricate web of factors that contribute to that final product.
This has been an eye-opening deep dive into the world of grapes and winemaking. It's amazing how much science and artistry go into every bottle.
It truly is a fascinating process, from the vine to the glass.
Before we wrap up, was there anything else from the research that particularly stood out to you?
Yes, there was a fascinating section on the impact of mechanical harvesting on grape quality.
Oh, okay.
While it's undoubtedly efficient,
Yeah.
it can sometimes lead to issues like increased oxidation of the juice and higher levels of fungal growth on the canes.
That's interesting. So even though mechanical harvesting is convenient, it might come with some trade-offs when it comes to the quality of the grapes.
Exactly. It's a reminder that every decision in the vineyard has potential consequences.
Well, I think we've all gained a newfound appreciation for the complexity of growing grapes and making wine.
I agree.
It's been an incredible journey.
It certainly has. And I hope this deep dive has equipped you with the knowledge and insights you need to nurture your vines and savor that first pick.
I know, I'm feeling inspired to get out into the vineyard and put all this knowledge to practice. Thanks for guiding us through this fascinating exploration.
It's been my pleasure.
And to all our listeners, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time for another adventure in the world of knowledge and discovery.